Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
There are people who were convicted but not sentenced to death, dying at the hands of the system.
Activists and family members of those who've died in jail in Alaska are sounding the alarm. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 10th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Alaska's Republican U.S. House candidates want voters to rank the red.
These are the cards that we've been dealt. This is the rule of the road now.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
So far this year, 15 people have died in Alaska jails and prisons, the most since 2015. 7 of the people who died were in custody for less than a month. The Department of Corrections screening process, record-keeping policies, and security practices mean there should be lots of documentation of what led up to these deaths. But the department says it can't disclose much. They're limited by confidentiality policies and health privacy laws. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports that family members and activists are sounding the alarm that this is a crisis that needs special attention.
Early one morning this summer, Nora Brown got a knock on her door in White Mountain, a small community near Nome. It was a village public safety officer letting her know that her 20-year-old daughter, Kitty Douglas, had died in jail. She'd only been there for 6 nights. It was a shock. They had talked on the phone recently, and Brown thought her daughter was safe at Highland Mountain Correctional Center after bouncing between an Anchorage youth shelter and homeless encampments. The VPSO didn't know what specifically happened, but Brown later found out through the state medical examiner that it was a suicide. She's learned little else from the authorities.
That's unavoidable. I know it.
Brown says her daughter had some known mental health issues and should have been under close watch.
I would rather die instead of be in jail. That was some of the things she expected from people here when they talked of jail. That was her train of thought. I'd rather die instead of be in jail.
Brown says she wants to file a wrongful death case against the state.
I would like to see them do their job, follow their own guidelines, and do what they could do best as they can, especially with people that they know are suicidal, people that they know that have mental illness in the case.
Kitty Douglas was the youngest of 15 people to die in the custody of the correction system so far this year. Most were under 40. It's unclear what's behind this year's high number of deaths and why 7 died within 2 weeks of going into custody. The department hasn't published the causes of death, with the exception of 91-year-old James Patrick Wheeler. His death in July was related to COVID-19. A department spokesperson said in an email that it takes each death seriously and conducts its own internal investigations, which includes looking for trends or underlying issues. A federal report shows that historically, illnesses are the leading cause of death among Alaska's inmates, followed by suicide and then drug or alcohol intoxication. The Department of Corrections will say that it does not suspect foul play in Kitty Douglas's death or any of the others this year.
No foul play does not mean that these people didn't die at the hands of the system.
That's Megan Edge, director of the Alaska Prison Project for the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska.
That's 15 people, some of which who were not convicted of crimes, who were not sentenced. There are people who were convicted but not sentenced to death, dying at the hands of the system.
Edge says her organization hasn't taken any legal action against the state, but it is working with some families of inmates who have died this year and community groups. She says letters were sent to the administration last week asking the state to preserve evidence, such as prison video recordings, in anticipation of future litigation. The organization is also calling on Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration to conduct a sweeping review of these deaths and other prisoner conditions.
It's really important that this investigation is done by an independent body, not the state investigating itself, and that the findings of the review are made public. That's how we ensure accountability and transparency.
From there, she says community leaders and policymakers can work on solutions. Some family members, like Nora Brown, have learned the immediate cause of their loved one's death by getting records from the state medical examiner's office themselves. Next of kin are entitled to those reports, but they usually aren't public. A department spokesperson says that many inmates come into the system with, quote, pre-existing, and in some cases, very complicated medical and mental health issues. Edge says that underscores why they should not be in a jail cell.
That's why they should be being treated by medical professionals. That's why they should be in hospital. That's why they should be in treatment. You know, the reality is the Department of Corrections is not staffed well enough or trained well enough to triage this crisis.
Edge says that's both an indictment of the prison system and a call for change beyond it to address contributing factors like substance abuse, a lack of mental health care, and the criminalization of poverty. Kitty Douglas is back home in White Mountain now, where she was buried in July. Normally at this time of year, Nora Brown says her daughter would have been finished picking berries for the season, had her silver salmon smoked and put away. She'd be climbing trees to find rabbits and ptarmigan to hunt, bear and moose to avoid.
You know, there's climb a tree, she could just climb a tree, any tree you looked at, she would probably find it right in front of you to show you she could. She was just a really bad tomboy.
Brown doesn't have closure. As the inmate death toll has risen this year, she wonders, why so many? In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
If you're in crisis or know someone who is, you can call 988 for confidential professional support. The Republicans in Alaska's U.S. House race are now both saying they want their supporters to rank the other Republican as their second choice. After losing the special election to Democrat Mary Peltola, former Governor Sarah Palin says she's no longer urging her voters to ignore the new system.
I had to swallow my pride because here I am saying these are the cards that we've been dealt. This is the rule of the road now. We have ranked choice voting, and until that's gone, we have to rank the red.
Palin spoke Sunday at a sparsely attended rally at the Denina Center in Anchorage, sponsored by a Lower 48 Political Action Committee. Palin was preceded by entertainers imitating Tina Turner and James Brown. Her Republican opponent, Nick Begich, said he was happy to hear Palin has adopted the rank the red message, but he emphasized their differences in style.
For most people that I speak with, they're looking for someone who's serious about the state of Alaska. You know, not somebody who's going to bring a James Brown impersonator from Chicago and do backflips on a stage. People who are actually going to work hard to solve the problems of Alaskans.
Palin has talked about her admiration for the House Freedom Caucus, which includes right-wing firebrands Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Jim Jordan of Ohio. Begich says if he's elected, the only caucus he's sure to join is the Republican caucus.
We have to stop thinking about politics like political entertainment. This is one of the big problems that we've experienced as a nation for the last decade.
Begich spoke after an Anchorage Chamber of Commerce forum today. He and Libertarian candidate Chris Bayh attended in person. Peltola participated by Zoom from Sitka. Palin sent a video. That's right, U.S. Representative Mary Peltola was in Sitka for Indigenous Peoples Day today. Her first stop of the day was at Mount Edgecombe High School, which hosted a first-ever all-student assembly for the three high schools in Sitka. Peltola used the occasion to deliver a very personal message about fear, growth, and the power of love. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Thank you to Congresswoman Mary Peltola for joining us in recognition of and in honor of Indigenous Peoples Day.
The Mount Edgecombe Gym is the only building big enough to hold everyone from its campus, plus the student body of Sitka High and Pacific High Schools. You might see this many people packing the bleachers for a regional basketball tournament, but probably not for a politician. But as it turns out, Representative Peltola is not just another politician visiting Mount Edgecombe for a photo op.
Hello, my name is Nora Nelson, and I'm honored to be able to introduce to you Alaska's only representative to the U.S. House of Representatives, my mom, Mary Poltola.
Nora Nelson is a freshman at Mount Edgecombe. Her mom, Representative Peltola, drew a connection between that and her own experience as a freshman member of the United States House of Representatives.
There's a lot of fear that goes into putting yourself out there and running for something, and a lot of fear and newness about going to a completely different environment, becoming part of a completely different culture and process.
Peltola encouraged students to surrender to fear, embrace other people, and be confident that they would emerge stronger. This is not the usual sort of rhetoric politicians engage in on the eve of a contentious midterm election, but it is the straightforward candor that brought Peltola notice during the special primary and election to replace the late Congressman Don Young. She told students that part of her success so far in politics, especially in her role serving on the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission, was to master her anger by listening to and watching elders and clearing her mind in order to move forward. Peltola believed that strategy was applicable on a larger scale.
Nationally, we have a lot of rhetoric that talks about fear and hatred as a motivator. And that just sets us all back. That sets us back as Americans, that sets us back as community members. And one of the best things I've learned through traditional knowledge is you really do have to, when you're facing challenges, you have to come at it from a place of love and patience.
The assembly concluded with what could be described as a Yupik flash mob, as Mount Edgecombe's Yupik dance group invited everyone from all schools onto the gym floor to learn a traditional welcome dance, which concludes with a hug. The idea is to dance with someone you don't know, and according to the dance caller, if you're not friends at the beginning, you will be by the end. The assembled student bodies, administrators, teachers, and Representative Peltola all found partners, learned the dance, and ran through it not once, but three times. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new fiber optic cable projects could improve internet access in Bethel.
We're going to have the ability to share the beauty of our culture with the rest of the world.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
An internet outage in Bethel over the weekend meant shoppers at a local grocery store couldn't use their credit cards. Two separate fiber optic cable projects could make internet less precarious in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta in coming years. As KYUK's Nina Kravinsky reports, GCI and Alaska Communications say the projects will bring Anchorage speeds and prices to Bethel and some surrounding communities by 2025.
Belasa Larson had just walked out the door of Alaska Commercial in Bethel on Saturday. She was one of many grocery shoppers that day who got there to find the store was only accepting cash.
It's an inconvenience for me because I don't carry cash.
She left some snacks on the shelf because she didn't have enough on hand.
Maybe I'll go on a diet.
AC employees say the issue with the payment systems on Saturday had to do with an internet outage that comes on the heels of an announcement about two new projects focused on bringing better internet to Bethel and some other communities in the region. Bethel Native Corporation President Anna Hoffman is excited about one of those two projects, both of which will bring fiber optic cables to the YK Delta.
So we're going to have very competitive rates and great service.
One of the projects is a partnership between Bethel Native Corporation and GCI. Hoffman says the first phase of the $42 million project is scheduled to be done by the end of 2024. Calista Corporation will take on a second similar effort alongside Alaska Communications, or ACS.
So this is absolutely going to be night and day.
Tom Leonard is a vice president at Calista. He says students and patients who rely on telehealth will benefit from the fiber optic cable.
We see this as the first step in hopefully connecting more communities on both rivers as funding becomes available.
Funding for both projects comes from $1 billion the federal government set aside for tribal broadband programs across the country. GCI currently serves YK Delta communities through a microwave network. The internet signal in a microwave network relies on radio waves. GCI spokesperson Heather Handyside says that's a slower system than fiber optics.
The microwave network, it's solid. Microwave is a great technology for delivering connectivity, but there's a maximum capacity that it will reach. There's a limit to what the amount of data that it can carry.
She says currently, download speeds in Bethel are around 10 megabytes per second. Once the city's on the fiber cable, she says users will see speeds of around 2,000 megabytes per second. In addition to faster speeds, Handyside says prices will go down significantly. GCI's Bethel customers pay around $300 a month for the company's fastest plan. Once communities are hooked up to fiber, she says they'll be able to access urban plans. An unlimited data plan in Anchorage currently costs $180 a month.
So 200 times faster and more than $100 cheaper. The cost of plans may slightly change over the years, but it'll be exactly what we have in Anchorage.
For Anna Hoffman in Bethel, the projects will bring more than just faster social media and cheaper streaming.
We have such a rich life. We have so much cultural knowledge and expression. We're going to have the ability to share the beauty of our culture with the rest of the world.
And along with sharing, Hoffman says better internet will make it easier to preserve and practice Yupik culture and tradition. In Bethel, I'm Nina Krivinsky.
Volunteers in Dillingham are organizing donations to send to people in Chivac after the remnants of Typhoon Murbach flooded communities along the coast of western Alaska last month, destroying stores of food and washing away harvesting gear. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports.
When the storm hit Chivac last month, half of the community's nearly 1,000 residents lost power to their freezers.
That kind of ruined some of them. So that was a big impact for most people.
Andrew Charles is the tribal administrator for Chivac's Native Village Council. All of the boats in Chivac are used for harvesting food.
90% of them that parked down by the river floated away for turn upside down. Some of them had brand new boats. A brand new motor.
People also lost other equipment, like nets and camping gear. That's why Dillingham resident Mark Lisick started a fish drive. He got the idea after he heard news coverage describing how the storm had affected people in coastal communities.
There were some folks in Chivac that said the food in their freezers went totally bad and they had to take it to the dump. I know that if that happened to us, we would be in a world of hurt. And I got up one morning and said, you know what, we've got some extra fish. I'm going to send it up there.
Lisick reached out to the Chogoyong Tribal Council, and they came up with a plan to get fish to Chivac and potentially other communities impacted by the storm. The Bristol Bay region wasn't hit by the storm, but Chogoyong Tribe's environmental coordinator, Desi Bond, says this is an important way to support neighbors, friends, and family that are struggling to make up for the losses, especially considering rising prices at the gas station and the grocery store.
It's very sad to lose a huge part of what keeps our families fed and warm in the winter. And so to be able to ask our community, you know, to help share, it's a big ask, but, you know, a lot of these families are going to go without. And if we have the means to be able to help them, I think this is a perfect way to extend our love, in a sense, our love for our subsistence way of life.
Back in Chivac, Andrew Charles says these and other donations will go to people who lost food, like elders and those who can't go hunting.
Any food that we get donations from anywhere, we usually pass them out to most needy here in Chivac.
It's unclear when the first shipments might head for Chivac. The volunteers aim to send a total of 3,000 pounds of fish. So far, they've collected 600 pounds of fish that processors had previously donated to the local food bank. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The crew of the former deadliest catch vessel turned tour boat, Aleutian Ballad, knows that time on the water is often dangerous. That's why each year they give a memorial pot to one coastal community impacted by accidents at sea. This year, the crew dedicated the memorial pot to Metlakatla, and as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, they were inspired by a recent documentary about Alaska's only native reserve.
I want you to know this right now. This is everyone's best shot at a title. Let's bring one home.
The award-winning 2021 documentary Alaskan Nets is mostly about Metlakatla's 2018 state championship-winning basketball team, but the film also focuses on the dangers Metlakatla's fishermen endure.
Seems like there's a funeral every month that touches kids.
In that movie, there's a couple dive accidents where we had lost some community members.
That's Metlakatla's mayor, Albert Smith. As the Metlakatla Chiefs fought to win the state tournament in 2018, their town faced a series of losses, both at sea and in the community. And that's why crew members on the Aleutian Ballad, the crabbing boat that became iconic on the Discovery Channel's Deadliest Catch, decided to pay Annett Island a visit. David Lathine is one of the Ballad's captains. He says that each year his crew looks for communities that have seen hardships related to fishing. Lathine says that over the summer tour season, visitors on board the Ballad scrawled memories about their time in Alaska on fish tags.
And so our guests, right here at the Bering Sea Crab Fisherman's Tour, would grab those tags, they put a donation in the box, and then we would zip tie those tags to the top of our crab pot, which we turned into a memorial pot.
By the end of the summer, the pot held $28,000, their biggest haul yet. It's for Metlakatla to start up its first community fund dedicated to families who have lost a loved one at sea. He remembers watching the documentary when it came out. That's what solidified Metlakatla as this year's pick.
It kind of portrays the kids growing up, you know, having to go hunting in the morning, having to go to algebra at 8 o'clock, having to go to school. Maybe they had to go fishing with somebody in the afternoon. It was the lifestyle. And on top of that, they had some accidents in their fisheries where some of the family members did not come home.
The Ballad made it to Metlakatla on October 3rd. Smith and members of the community came aboard the boat and listened as Lathine shared stories about the Aleutian Ballad and other memorial pots. There was cheering when a check was presented to Smith. Lathine remembers meeting Smith and hearing him talk about the struggles a family faces when a loved one doesn't come back from a trip on the water.
There's even times when they do have a fisherman's memorial. It's up on the point there, right in town, right on the edge of the point, overlooking the water. And he shared that, you know, when we have accidents here, some of the families don't even have enough money to buy the plaque to put on the memorial for their loved ones that were left behind.
Lathine says the Aleutian Ballad passed through Metlakatla's waters many times this summer.
And many times their fishermen are in the waters, the gillnetters, the seiners, which we get to see them right up close next to us. But they have welcomed us. They were always waving. They might be dancing on the back of their boats.
Smith says the community plans to set the funds aside to help families who have lost loved ones at sea. He says the community is grateful for the gift.
We're so appreciative of the thoughtfulness of the crew of the Aleutian Ballad and all their guests throughout the summer tours.
As for the next memorial pot, Lathine says he isn't sure where it will land. He thinks that fishing communities impacted by Hurricane Ian's landfall might be a good place to look. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
A weekend event in the Fairbanks area celebrated the life of mushing great Lance Mackey, the four-time Iditarod and Yukon Quest champion who died of cancer last month. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, Mackey was remembered for his natural competitiveness and ability to connect with people.
Friends, fellow mushers, and fans gathered Saturday night at the Howling Dog Saloon in Fox to remember and celebrate Lance Mackey, who lived and trained dogs just up the Elliott Highway. Howling Dog owner Ralph Glasgow says it was an opportunity for locals who were not able to attend a service for Mackie last month in the Matsu Valley.
Memorial for all of us to remember and tell stories and raise a toast to Lance ourselves.
Glasgow says the Howling Dog played a key role in Mackie's story.
Jenny, his last wife, was one of my bartenders, and he stole her away.
Glasgow says he was approached about hosting the event by Mackie friend and fellow Yukon Quest champion Hugh Neff, who took to the mic Saturday to share some Mackie stories.
He was the Jack Sparrow of dog mushing, because not only was he going to win the race, he was going to make a fool out of you at the same time.
Neff recounted how Mackie sometimes played mind games with his competitors, like when he faked having dog trouble while pacing musher William Cleedon down the Yukon Quest Trail.
Lance is like messing with his dogs, and William comes up and he goes, "What's wrong?" And he's like, "Oh, my team's quitting on me." And little did William even realize that Lance put up his wheel dog and lead just to mess with William.
Neff also highlighted Mackie's natural magnetism, as evident during a stop on the Iditarod Trail at New Lotto.
You couldn't see Lance because the whole village of Nalato was surrounding him and his dog team. And that's how much we all love Lance. So here's to Lance.
There's never going to be anybody like Lance.
Mary Nyukpuk also reflected on Mackie's ability to connect with people.
He was just amazing. When he walks in, you could feel his presence.
Mackie dominated distance mushing between 2005 and 2010. And local musher Jody Bailey remembers how, despite celebrity status and pressure to win, Mackie took time to reassure her at the start of her first Iditarod.
Come up and give me this big hug and just, like, you know, kid me a little bit and then say, "Don't worry, Jody, you've got this." That was just the kind of guy he was.
He kind of showed the little guys that they have a chance in the sport, and that gave me a lot of inspiration.
Another local musher, Deke Nyakteboren, recounted how Mackie was on the Iditarod Trail outside of Nome to greet incoming teams when the pandemic left Front Street otherwise empty.
There was no one. And he came out to make sure, like, all the back-of-the-pack finishers were, like, you know, congratulated and stuff. That was a really nice thing for him to do.
In recent years, Lance Mackie switched from racing dogs to racing cars, where he also found success.
I'll use the word, he was a natural, ready to go. Yeah, he had the will to win.
Longtime local racer Al Treadle, who mentored Mackie on the track, says he rapidly developed winning driving technique.
He could slide the car into a corner, go into a slide, have the throttle pin, and have the car pointed towards the straightaway. And we were wondering how that man could do that.
Mackie raced cars in Alaska and the lower 48 over the last several years, traveling with his two young children, who Saturday's event at the Howling Dog was also a fundraiser for. In Fox, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Nina Kravinsky in Bethel, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, and Dan Bross from The Howling Dog in Fox, Alaska. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.